Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And we were just talking about what you need to do as listeners when you're assessing what reliability course you should be doing to further your career or further your value to the organization. And it hits pretty close to the mark for Fred and I, because we create these courses. So I said, it's always important for us to focus on the students and what it is they need and what they want to see in courses that makes them the best reliability engineer they can be.
You know, part of the hard part, though, when you phrase it that way, is we do focus on our students and what do they need, but sometimes they don't know what they need. We're coming at it with an experience that we're trying to impart to them, and so that sounds kind of arrogant when I say it like that. Yet, if I'm not exposed as a student, if I'm not exposed to concepts that I was unaware of before, I'd walk away from the course going, I already knew all that. Why did I spend the time doing that? Or I found a few hints or tips here, or, you know, little things like that. But it's not near as valuable as a course that exposes you to things that you just had no grasp of before, or hadn't considered before, or hadn't developed before. And it's one of the things that allows us, in our engineering work anyway, to, as Newton said, to stand on the shoulders of giants, right? As we can make advances because there's all this groundwork before us, yet we need to know what's there. So that's right. One of the, I think, a critical value of a course is that it's one of the benefits of a course. It allows, and I think it's the primary one, it allows us to explore and examine and understand things that we otherwise would not have known about. And books do the same, podcasts do the same, but courses allows you to have that level of interaction, in especially in live courses, that these other media just tend not to have as well of. But with more and more asynchronous courses, it still has that function of imparting knowledge. And I think that's the crux of a good course. But that's any course, any type of course whatsoever. But for reliability, it still holds, I think.
I'm going to challenge you on that, because I think if the crux of a course is you learning something you didn't already know about, then we have recently talked about what we think is a blight on the industry, which is just this prevalence of statistics and probabilistic stuff. And people think a Weibull plot, for example, is reliability engineering, and that's all you need to do. And getting, you know, probability plotting software or reliability modeling software and all this sort of stuff, that is what reliability engineering is. And unfortunately, that's sort of taken the focus away, at least in our opinions, from just designing reliability in from the start, which is sometimes not sexy, sometimes doesn't involve confidence bounds. It actually requires you to stop and think about the thing you're designing. And engineers are very much like tigers, you know, the tiger and turtle analogy. Engineers want to solve a problem as soon as it gets in front of them. Mm-hmm. Turtles want to go back in their shell. That's not what engineers do. But the problem with that is that you tend to rush to get the solution. And sometimes you get a bigger rush from having the wrong thing fast than the right thing slow. So going back to the crux that you were saying, I think there's plenty of courses out there which moonlight as reliability engineering courses, but in fact, a little more than statistics and probabilistic analysis, that without the concept doesn't make the student a better reliability engineer, but we'll still teach them something that's brand new. So from my perspective, it can't just be something that the student didn't know about beforehand.
Yeah, good point. And I'm thinking back, I got my binder open from a course I took, I don't know, 35 years ago. It was, it was an introduction to reliability. Was the title of the course. And it started, it was a 5-day in-person class up in San Francisco. And the first day was, this is the exponential distribution. This is its PDF. This is its CDF. This is the way the curves look. And, you know, here's the hazard rate. And it has some nice features. And here's a Weibull distribution. Here's a log normal distribution. We did that for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
I was bored out of my mind.
Right.
If I would have... You're right. When I looked at that course outline, I said, "Oh, I'm going to learn reliability statistics." That I don't know much about that, so I was learning something new. But I failed to connect it to something I could use. It was just really a stats course that was on reliability statistics. It didn't talk about in my systems. I learned one thing in that class is that a lot of classic statistics assumes independence of the variables and your factors. And I'm working in a polymer industry where everything interacts with everything else in this polymer system.
There
are no independent anything. So a lot of the work I was doing really was a stretch for the statistics to work, the classic
stuff. Right.
But I agree with you. So let's amend it by saying it's got to add value. The stuff you're learning is something that you can use and it's practical and adds value. If I didn't know about Weibull plotting and I was doing, you know, taking a look at field failure analysis and the only thing I knew how to do was a Pareto analysis, it adds value. It helps the engineers know what are the top hitters and it's a simple analysis. I can do that. But it doesn't inform them about what's early life, what's a decreasing failure rate, what's an increasing failure rate, and, you know, what's the time to failure distribution for these things. It doesn't give you that information.
Right.
So if I learn about doing a Weibull analysis or the statistical analysis of time to failure data, now I can add another level of information that I otherwise wouldn't know. I'm not going to say that. I think the point is that if I can apply it, if I can add value by having that knowledge, that's great. And it's not just that it's something I didn't know before because that's trivial. It's something that adds a unique tool to the toolbox that I have application for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's any better.
Well, I mean, I think add value it needs to be broad. It can't just be one thing, but it can't be just, you can't say this was reliability is not just for reducing time to market or improving warranty reliability, which obviously is valuable
mm-hmm.
from that perspective. That's just one aspect. I think value needs to be quite broad. But I'm going to ask the listeners to sort of engage me with what I'm about to say. And when I say engage, I know you're driving in your cars and listening to this podcast or otherwise doing something where you can't type straight away perhaps, but I'd like to see how many people agree with me when I describe the typical reliability engineering course. And I think in the previous podcast, I mentioned that there are three phases. The first phase is you talk about a catastrophe, airplane crashing the ground, deep water horizon, space shuttle explosion.
Tacoma Narrows Bridge, you can always find a video of that.
Oh, so good. That video has everything. It's got the scared civilian running for his or her life off the bridge. You got this thing, a bridge which is clearly not supposed to be doing what it's doing, and it's not even failing a little bit. It is failing spectacularly. And that's anyway. So that's the first phase of most reliability engineering courses. Bad things are everywhere. Phase two is a stuffy looking person who says reliability is really, 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 really important, and all they do is reference phase one. Aircraft crashing, nuclear power plant explode.
Recalls. List of recalls from your industry.
Right. Another classic one. And then phase three, which is easily the longest phase of the reliability engineering course, is, right, let's start eating probability and statistics and kurtosis and means and percentiles and Fourier transforms and blah, 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 blah. If anyone's listening to this podcast and agrees or disagrees, it'd be great to see you say so in the comments. You can probably guess that Fred and I suspect what the answer is going to be. But it'd be great to confirm our suspicions, because we have been those poor unfortunates in those classes and those courses and lectures back in the day where that's all that was taught. And So I suppose tying that one off, what are we looking for in reliability engineering courses? They need to not just be that. You talked about how it needs to teach you something new, which is really useful, which is one of the first things you should look at in a reliability course. If you don't get pushed outside your comfort zone, you never grow. The second thing is it needs to add value. And I think the third thing is that it needs to relate to your personal professional experience. It's all well and good saying, hey, there's recalls left, right, and center. Hey, these days, brand reputation is more important than ever. And these days, the impact of online customer reviews, which can happen the minute you launch your product, they've never been more important. So that's all. That's why reliability is really, really, really important. But if that's where the course stops when it comes to its motivation, then all it's going to do is simply talk about the suite of reliability activities. They all get considered important because they all in their own way somehow linked to reputation, all this high-level nonsense that doesn't matter to you in your daily life, but it never explains or takes the time to teach you how to use reliability for your own personal professional benefit.
Yeah, there's a in my experience in working with teams that are designing a product or maintaining a system, either one of them is they've got a challenge in front of them. It's how do I meet the cost and budget deals, but I also want it to last for 10 years. And so I'm trying to balance all these priorities. And so the info, which I've not been taught in a course, I've been taught by mentors, is that if I'm going to do an analysis, let's say I do some root cause analysis one of my favorites was we suspected the circuit board, the way it was mounted, was going to flex the circuit board. And that's usually a really bad thing in order to keep components on the board, because a little bending back and forth, components fall off. The solder cracks pretty easily. And so we were saying, you know, from our experience, this is not a good idea. And the mechanical engineers are like, well, tolerance stack up, blah, 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 blah. It's just not possible. It's cost too much. We'll just have to make that work. And so we took it on the lab, put it on a high-speed camera, and watched how much it was flexing. And then, of course, a part flew off, and you could see it in the replay of it. And we didn't do any statistics. We did one sample. We did all this stuff, and I didn't learn this in the course, but I didn't walk up to him and say, you know, you need to fix this. I didn't have the authority to do that.
Right.
So I just showed him the video, and this part goes flying off. He goes, right, we got to fix that.
Yeah.
You know, but it brings home to me that in the course, in a good reliability course, it'll include some set of tools, right? It's FMEA and HALT, and it could be a broad overview of a bunch of different things that enables you to bring useful information to the folks that need to know it. Is this product going to last 20 years? Yes or no? Well, if that's the kind of problem you're trying to solve, then a course that teaches you accelerated life testing may be appropriate for you to go sort out how to answer that question. But the idea is that it's how do you connect that accelerated test to the real life sets of constraints and needs and desire, you know, what is the end result, and will that actually end up being useful for your audience? That part is often missing from courses, is how do you connect these things so that they provide a coherent picture at the end of the day?
Yeah, it's just humans love doing things that they know. There's a phrase called the comfort zone for a reason. Mm-hmm. We have things we're more comfortable doing. And that's the same can be said of instructors and teachers. If they're good at whiteboard plotting, if they know it inside and out, that might just dominate their so-called reliability engineering course.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to your point. I mean, how does that link with other stuff to help inform a decision which makes everyone happy and makes everyone feel like a winner? And often it's done in isolation. And in some courses, they do viable probability plotting, and you and I have both seen them where just the conclusions that you're taught are just flat out wrong. There's so much you can read from a viable plot if you know what you're looking for, besides the two numbers that most software packages just throw your way.
Yep.
And there's also things like, well, how certain, how confident are you that these, the outcome of your hard-earned statistical genius is reflecting what's going on? All those sort of nuances often lost.
That was one of the courses way back that I thought was brilliant that I took. It was and it was on a statistics type stuff, but it was looking at it was essentially a regression analysis class. And the homework wasn't, here's some data, do the regression, you know, calculate the goodness of fit, you know, assess whether it's a good fit or not. Is it fit this one or better or that one? Whatever. It was make up some data to show these different nuances, these different problems. What happens if the kurtosis is off? What would that look like? Go figure that out. And right. So we had to play with data sets to create these, you know, smiley faces or S shapes and all these other ways that the regression would signal that something's not right here. So we were putting in artifacts in order to see what they look like. And I thought that flipped it over on top of itself. Because if I would have, you know, the other way to do it is get a data set that has two failure mechanisms in it, right? So the Y will plot has a hockey stick kind of approach.
Yeah.
And well, what does that mean? Well, it's a different thing when you, what I learned was that you can play with these software packages all day long and say, well, what if I deliberately put in two dominant failure mechanisms? How will they mix? And then I create a hypothesis. I say, well, it'll just do a blended curve. It won't. No, this thing turned into a right angle, you know, basically. Oh, okay. That's interesting. The other experiment was, it was part of the class was, well, how do you know if it's a normal distribution or not? And it's like, well, plot it, put it in a histogram. All right, now let's play with the size of the bars on the histogram. And if you do that enough times, you can make anything look like a normal curve. Just choose how many you put bins in which bin, how much you put in each bin. And so it was, okay, the defaults aren't necessarily the whole story. And so part of understanding a tool or a technique or a software package is understanding what and how it works and what defaults are using. And you've done this in your webinars is going like, here's, this just doesn't make sense. And never realized that before. It's like, yeah, you're right. That those confidence bounds shouldn't bend over on top themselves. It's kind of ridiculous. Never really dawned on me. It's just, oh, they're wide. I'm not going to worry about it. And most of the time they're so broad anyway, because we have such scant data. But if coming back to a course, if I'm looking at a course outline, is it going to help me solve the problems that I foresee coming up? Is it going to broaden my skill set? Things like that. But it's also the soft side. It's, does it enable me to understand it well enough to explain it to my peers or to help them understand it? And so that they can use that information in a meaningful way. You know, if it's just, you know, put the plot up and you're good, but you don't really understand why it's structured that way or what it's telling you, it's not connected to something I can use.
Well, I think you, and another thing you should look at as a student when you're trying to do a reliability engineering course or you're looking for one to do, it's more of something to avoid, I would argue, is software. Well, there's a lot of courses out there run by organizations that sell software. And so a lot of the courses tend to be, let's just say, thinly veiled propaganda sessions for why their software is the best, how to use the software, and the software, just using the software makes you an awesome reliability engineer. Now, to be fair, there are courses out there which don't pretend to be anything else, but do this course to learn how to use our software, which is fine, fantastic. But there are also courses out there which say, which are essentially Reliability Engineering 101.
And we happen just, to be using the software, which we make and sell.
Which is a huge red flag. Now, you just talked on, for our listeners, we just touched on, you might have missed what Fred was saying, but there's software often produces confidence bounds and CDF plots which bend back over on itself, which is impossible, which means that the vast majority of reliability engineering software out there which does statistical inference is based on assumptions and approximations that even though you have the visage of perfection and accuracy because it's a software package, in practice it produces results which are just not physically possible because of those assumptions. And a lot of us don't know what those assumptions are. Sorry, those in the industry do know what those assumptions are because they're quite well known. But if you're just a relatively junior reliability engineer or any engineer, you're just using these software packages to solve a problem or answer a question, if you don't know what those assumptions are, then you could be making horrifically catastrophic recommendations to your manager as a result, which brings us back to the courses which are piggybacked onto software packages. You need to be very, very careful for those courses that are offered, which just happen to be entirely based on software package XYZ.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of how we summarize this. If you're looking for a course, it's when I look for something I want to go learn, and I follow I'm on an email list for Coursera and EDX and LinkedIn courses and stuff like that. So I get recommendations all the time and I look at the course and go, is it worth my investment to spend the time with this course and put the effort into consume and understand the material set in here? Is what's in this material in this course going to be practical and useful for me? Do I have an application for it? Is kind of my first filter of the course. Then I look at the details of it. How is it organized? How is it arranged? And in reliability stuff, it's, yeah, if you're looking to know about reliability statistics and that's the bulk of the content of the thing, and you've got other venues to help you connect that to all the other stuff we do for like design for reliability and influencing people, that might be exactly the right course for you. But if you're there to learn how to be a better reliability engineer and to influence decisions, well, is that part and parcel of the course? Is that underlying piece of it? Or is it just in the motivation part? It's important if you hear that enough times that you'll figure it out. Well, no, that's a learned skill, is how to work with other people and influence them and to bring your data set in a meaningful way to life for the other people so they can understand it. Those are beyond just using the software or just creating a graph. When I look for a course, it has a number of those criteria. And then is it done well? I also look for, is the course coherent? If it's a somebody's iPhone in the back of the room following somebody in a, dark room doing PowerPoint slides, it's just not produced well. I don't think I'll enjoy it. I'll be struggling just to understand the person because their mic was 25 feet away and in a loud fan was running next to it, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's got to be produced well too, whether it's live or online. So I look for those kind of things also.
Well, I mean, that takes my list of six, the things that I recall from this conversation in terms of the things that students need to be looking for when they're looking for a reliability engineering course. So the first one is it needs to be something new. They don't need to be reinforcing something they already know. That's just wasting everyone's time. The second one is the course needs to end up adding value through you learning a thing that will then go and generate value in whatever place you work at thereafter. And the third one is that, and this is a big one for me in particular, is that that course needs to speak to you on a personal, professional level. How is it going to help your day-to-day job? Mm-hmm. Why is this important to you? Not just strategic organizational goals like reputation, this and recall that. Why? How is it going to help you? The fourth one, which you pointed out, Fred, was about joining the dots, how it can't just be one tool. It needs to be a course needs to teach you what tools you can use and how they work together and how they're used in certain situations to get you what you want, get to gain you that value you're after.
Yeah.
The fifth one is to be very careful of courses which just happen to be packaged with software applications. There's lots of shortcomings to software applications. They can be incredibly useful if you know what their limitations are, but are often sold as the be-all and end-all and the ultimate oracle of reliability awesomeness. So if you have a course which is piggybacked with a software package, that cause can sometimes devolve into that propaganda for said software package. And the sixth one, which you just mentioned, is it done well? Is the course something that the instructor has taken the time to shoot relatively professionally? The audio is not muffly. It's not that quintessential university online course where it's simply a video of a professor in a classroom teaching other students. How is that course structured to leverage the online tools that we can access today? Have I covered the vast majority of those things we look for yeah. reliability courses?
Well, I think you got six there, and we can ask our listeners if there's others. You know, what do you use? I mean, price probably is in there someplace too, but I think that goes back to, is it a value? I lump it there. But what do you use as criteria? Is a good, you know, does it get good reviews? Is it high in the Yelp meter or whatever they call that thing? Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. I don't know why I was pausing there. I was trying to figure out if I had a dash or a dot there for some reason. Luckily, my browser fills ascendoreliability.com in for me, so I don't have to type it out every time. And hope that's the same for you. So head over to Ascendo. Let us know what you think. You can find Chris and I and the other hosts of the show on our About pages, and you can certainly get in touch with us there or on LinkedIn. Please participate. Chris set out a challenge for you, a quick poll, let him know how it's going. But we'd also like to hear from you if you have other ideas or suggestions. And in this particular case, you know, how do you evaluate or judge a course before you sign up for it? So with that, Chris, I think we'll see what we get. I think we'll get a couple of good ideas here.
Let's hope so.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.